The Outlet. The talk of Queenstown.
Welcome to The Outlet. I'm your host, Brent Harbour. In this podcast, I talk to Duncan Spear, the Marketing and Operations Manager for Puzzling World Wanaka, who is celebrating 50 years as an iconic visitor attraction. We chat about how the idea of Puzzling World came about, where ideas for new illusion rooms come from, and importantly, what's the design of the cake to celebrate 50 years. Also, I catch up with Wayne Howard. Wayne is the CEO for Ronald McDonald House Charities in New Zealand. We chat about the last 10 years of the Ronald McDonald Family Room at Southland Hospital, what makes it so welcoming and comfortable for families, and their plans for the future.
For the latest local news, sport, information, and entertainment, download the Queenstown app. This is The Outlet.
G'day, Duncan. Welcome to The Outlet podcast.
Hi, Brent. Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Could you give me a bit of the history of Puzzling World and how it all began with Stuart and Jan's vision?
Yeah, sure. So I guess from the beginning, really. So Stuart Lansborough, my father-in-law, he came over to this side of the globe as what they call a 10-pound POM in the late 60s. So went left England and sailed over to Western Australia. He worked on the mines and sort of the outback pubs over there for the summers, and then went across to the Victorian ski fields for winter. Did that for a few seasons. Then he decided to come over to New Zealand, where he got a job at the Mount Cook THC, which is, of course, now the Hermitage. Then he met Jan, his future wife, there. She was working as a waitress. They then got called down to the Wanaka THC, which is now, of course, the Wanaka Hotel, where Stu got the job as the head steward. Then I guess after working there for a while, they could sort of see that, you know, tourism in Wanaka was certainly, I guess, growing steam. You know, they sort of thought they wanted to sort of get in on that. They wanted to be their own bosses. And, you know, given that, I guess, tourism was sort of one area that they had some experience in by that stage, they sort of thought, you know, that's probably a good area to get into. The Haas Pass was almost paved by that stage. Wide-body jets were coming through Auckland and Christchurch by then. Queenstown Airport was expanding. A triple cone was about to open as a ski field for commercial use. Really, things were starting to sort of gather steam, so they thought they'd want to sort of get on that. So they opened up the maze December the 22nd, 1973. They banded around a few ideas before they came into a maze. Yeah, I mean, they sort of decided that, you know, again, they wanted to build something that was relatively inexpensive, something that they could, you know, try for a while, and if it didn't pan out, then it wouldn't be too cost prohibitive to sort of start again. And, you know, they wanted to do something that was a bit different. You know, really their whole idea was create something where tourists are on holiday to create happiness. So they wanted to basically grow a business that would entertain people, something that's a bit different. So really, we've always had uniqueness as part of our key mantra, and that's still the case now. You know, every time we think of a development to add, we don't really just sort of look to see what's been done. We try to invent something new, because I guess, unfortunately, in our industry, copycat operations are coming up all the time, and really the last decade especially, we've seen a massive growth in businesses that are sort of copying what we do. Unfortunately, on the other side of that, the silver lining is that it sort of, you know, makes us create new things, which we're all about, and about to do something very cool, very unique, which I'll talk to you later on about, I'm sure.
That's great. Now, I have been lost in the maze, I have to admit, Duncan, and I did use the cheat doors, okay? But the design for the maze is pretty unique, isn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, Stu grew up in Hampton in London, so very near the Hampton Court Palace maze. So I guess as a child, he would have been able to see how popular mazes were as an attraction. And so, you know, to go back a step, when they were thinking of ideas, you know, the whole idea of a maze sort of came upon them. And you know, I guess, you know, that was it's good to Stu to sort of hark back on his memories there and go for something there. But most mazes of the world are just sort of random designs. They don't really make a lot of sense, or else they're just basically unicursal patterns that just sort of follow one direction and finish in the middle. So he decided fairly early on that, you know, the maze that he was going to design, or that they were going to design, was basically going to get people around the whole of the maze. Wouldn't be too easy, wouldn't be too hard, obviously, but people would be in there for a length of time that they felt was good value and enough of a challenge. So he would literally stand in the middle of the maze on some blocks of wood and actually watch where people would go in the maze and then design it accordingly. So he designed these things called gates or valves, dead ends, obviously, all, as I say, basically designed to keep people in there for that sort of 45-minute period, which is sort of about long enough people to sort of, you know, feel they've had a good run at it. and, you know, enough of a challenge that if they want a really hard maze, they've sort of got that element to it as well, or they want to sort of cheat and get out early, then at least they can do that too and sort of get on their way.
I got lost in the Hampton Court maze as well with the family, I have to tell you.
All right. I've been to the palace before, but I never went to the maze, unfortunately, so I must go there one day. You can sort of see why Stu and Jan decided not to sort of build it with the hedge maze, because they take a good 8 years to sort of grow to the right sort of density to make it worthwhile. So that's why they decided to build their maze with wood. So, I mean, you know, it sort of took 6 weeks from go to woe to build the maze.
Can you tell me about the first tourists who visited Puzzling World and how you plan to celebrate and commemorate their role?
I guess the first people that came through the business were mainly over the school holidays. You know, the summer holidays were the only really busy time in New Zealand tourism back then. So obviously three terms back then, so you had busy summer holidays, Easter holidays weren't so bad, winter holidays were pretty slow up until, I guess, down here anyway, Triple Cone and Cardrona sort of got going. Cardrona was in the sort of early to mid 80s. The first tourists were generally domestic tourists, you know, that were coming here on those summer school holidays. Like, I guess tourism in general has always suffered a little bit from these macroeconomic shocks. So no sooner had the business sort of opened up than we had sort of one of those Gulf Wars, which sort of plunged country into oil crises and you know, car-free days and things like that. So that sort of put a bit of a dent in tourism for the first year or two, followed by other things. It's really been mainly the Kiwi customers that the business sort of lived and breathed for the first few years. And then once the sort of the package tourists came from overseas, and as I say, once the West Coast route opened up to be more easier, linkage between West Coast and Queenstown, that's when international sort of came through. We're now sitting at about 50-50 our international to domestic market throughout the year. So we will be celebrating by having a community fun day on December the 17th, where our front lawn will be playing host to food trucks. We'll have musicians out there, we'll have some lawn games, just lots of fun on the front lawn. And then inside the business itself, we'll be opening up our brand new Illusion Room, which will be launched that day, all going well. And we'll be also offering 50% off all our tickets as well. So that's scheduled for December the 17th. So it's a Sunday. So first weekend of school holidays.
Oh, that's brilliant. So can you tell me about some of the rooms at Puzzling World and where the ideas come from? Obviously, you got the new Illusion Room coming up too.
Whenever Stu and Jan would travel overseas, they would sort of, I guess, keep their eyes open and you know, go to these science museums and exhibitions and, you know, take some learnings from these things. There are also unique ideas, you know, ideas that Stu has taken from trinkets that he's been given or that he's bought or whatever, and sort of taken it into an Illusion Room idea and expanded the concept. I guess the example of that would be the Following Faces Illusion Room. So, you know, he was given this concave porcelain face as a gift from his brother many years ago from a shop in England, and he then sort of thought, well, you know, if it was to shine light behind the face, make it with opaque plastic so it shines the light through and cast, you know, shadows, would that improve the illusion? And sure enough, it did. And so, you know, he designed a room of 168 faces that see when you follow you, you know, left and right, up and down. And so that's, you know, an Illusion Room unique to us. The Ames Illusion Room, it's not a new one, but we've made it much larger than any other room in the world. You know, obviously we've got the Scott Illusion Gallery, which is our fifth Illusion Room at the moment. And, you know, we sort of commissioned a whole lot of sculptors and artists to come up with unique illusionary sort of sculptures and artworks and things. And that's what sort of takes quite a place up there. And then, you know, as you come back through as well, you know, Japan was a good source of information. Stu was over there in the 1980s. Where he designed a whole lot of mazes under contract, and so he used, you know, time off to visit science museums over there and saw how popular things like holograms were, or, you know, the Tilted House Illusion, for instance. You know, there's been some ideas that have been borrowed and expanded on, and you know, it's been fun to sort of be part of that and also help sort of, you know, keep that sort of mode of growth going.
Do you have a favourite room, Duncan?
I do. I mean, I mentioned the Scott Illusion Gallery because that's sort of our baby. So Heidi and I, who took the business over almost 20 years ago now, obviously our ideas were to come in here with fresh eyes and you know, not only redevelop what's here already, but also keep expanding what's the business all about. And so we added the Scott Illusion Gallery about 10 years ago now, delayed by the GFC, you know, again, one of those macroeconomic shocks that we sort of had to factor in a little bit. So that's a very large space that not only offers us awesome circulation of customers, because obviously as the business has gone over 3 to 5 years, we've just had more and more customers coming through. So we've always been aware of people in the busy times of the year, you know, not being come too sort of claustrophobic and shoulder to shoulder through the room. So it was nice to build a room of you know, 600 metres squared sort of thing to allow good circulation through. It also allows us really nice venue space as well, so we use it quite a bit for evening events. That's by far my favourite, but we have got a new Illusion Room coming up in 2 or 3 weeks' time, which I'm sure will be awesome as well, so looking forward to that.
Are you having a 50th anniversary birthday cake, and do you know what the design's going to be?
We are, so we're using Claire from Wanaka Cakes again. So Claire is an ex-staff member, actually, and we got her on board to make our 40th anniversary cake 10 years ago. And she did this incredible design that used a matchstick model of the maids that Stu and Jan used all those years ago to sort of take in front of council before they built the business. And so she designed a cake based around that. Just fantastic. So yeah, so she's got the job for the 50th cake as well. And I cannot tell you what our design is, because as yet it is undecided.
Oh, that sounds great. Oh, it's just a fantastic place, Puzzling World. So can you tell me where people can go online to find out more about Puzzling World and book their tickets?
If you go to puzzlingworld.co.nz or even puzzlingworld.com, there's a tickets button there. But look, bear in mind, you don't actually need to buy tickets here. You can come at the front counter and buy tickets on arrival. No problems at all. But as I say, if you want to join us and get 50% off your ticket, then December the 17th, is the day to come and see us. There'll be lots of fun things on the front lawn to do, and hopefully the weather is going to be as lovely as it is today. I'm sure it will be. We're looking forward to welcoming all the locals have a great day, and then that night have a big night with our VIPs who are coming down to join us as well.
Congratulations on 50 years of Puzzling World, Duncan, and I really appreciate your time today.
No, all good. Thanks very much.
You're listening to The Outlet,
the talk of Queenstown.
Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the Outlet Podcast.
G'day, Brent. Nice to be here.
The Ronald McDonald Family Room at Southland Hospital has been there for the past decade. So how did the idea for the room come about, and what were your initial goals?
So look, it was before my time as the national CEO, but essentially we look at need across the country, and what we're seeing in the Southland Hospital is a critical infrastructure need for that much wider region of the country, and a lot of families have to travel a lot of distance to get to that hospital. So we felt a facility close by, especially for the neonatal intensive care unit, would be a great opportunity for families that especially have to travel a long distance to have a bit of respite but be close to their child same time.
So could you describe the location and the layout of the family room at the hospital? I mean, what features make it welcoming and comfortable for families, Wayne?
I think one of the best aspect of it is you can actually see the NICU ward out the windows. And so if you're in the ward, you can see the house. So it's connected with a corridor to the NICU unit. So families can just go in between very, very easily. And so they come in, there's a beautiful reception area and waiting area. And then if you sort of peel off to the left, there's a lounge area and our staff sit there. And then behind that, there's a fantastic kitchen that's always fully stocked with a lounge area and TV space. And then behind that is what I would call a barbecue area that's closed off. Also gets a lot of sun, which is fantastic. And then if you go to the opposite side of the building, there's 4 bedrooms fully ensuited. And, you know, some of the real nice touches from families that have stayed before, donors that bring their own personal touch to those rooms and to the facility as a whole, is part of that whole magic that makes that family room such a beautiful place to be at.
Now, funding is so crucial. How is the Ronald McDonald Family Room funded and sustained? And who are some of the local partners involved that help you out, Wayne?
You know, funding becomes more and more difficult every year. I think one of the issues we're seeing, and we're not the only ones, is the, you know, cost of living goes up, and as interest rates start to bite, people's purses shrink, understandably, right? So there's challenge around that. But we've been really lucky in the family room in Southland that we've got some fantastic supporters. In particular, one of the families, and I'll talk about them in a little bit in a moment, the McRae family, they've actually sponsored a room along with SBS Bank, who are fantastic supporters and have been for a long time. McDonald's have come in and sponsored a room, Ambassador Group, and Mercury Energy. And then we have, you know, like a lot of people do lots of different fundraising, but we have the Ray White Home and Garden Tour, which actually is on the 24th or 25th of February next year. The local community has got right in behind. In fact, I was at the 10-year celebration last week and just met a whole bunch of people. And people are just so enamored by the facility and what we're doing from families, not just for Invercargill, but from that wider region and caring for them. when they need it most.
It's great when you see the community getting involved and they really get behind it, and they raise some incredible amounts of money as well, don't they?
Unbelievable. Like, the sponsoring a room is not cheap for a start, because, you know, we turn those rooms over about every 7 days, and it's cost us about $170 to house a family per night. So sponsoring a room over the course of a year is a big undertaking. But, you know, things like the Home and Garden Tour, you know, they net sort of some $100,000. And out of that community in Invercargill, that's incredible.
Now, staffing is an important part of the family room's operation. So who's the team responsible for running and maintaining it? And what part do they play when they support families, Wayne?
Helen, who's our lead, is primarily care for the entire facility. But then it's making sure that we've got the right volunteers and the right shift staff. And essentially, you know, our ethos is around making sure that our focus, our resources, our time and our financial effort focuses on those families, because if we focus on them, take away all the daily needs, you know, if we can get rid of those daily requirements, when your child is sick, those day-to-day things that are normally just nothing become mountains. We can get rid of those mountains and concentrate on the family. We know that they can concentrate on their child. And so the rate of recovery, the incidence of recovery, the mental well-being for the family and the child improves by staying at a Ronald McDonald House, family room or house, wherever that may be. And so our team is really focused on the needs of the family, because we know if we do that, they can concentrate on their child, and then we get greater outcomes for everybody, not just for the family, but for the community as a whole and for New Zealand Inc. as a whole. You know, for every dollar invested in Ronald McDonald House, there is a $4.80 return of social good to New Zealand Inc.
Yeah, that is fantastic. You did mention it before, so what are some of the memorable stories for you of people who have stayed at the Ronald McDonald family room?
I was talking to Helen the other day, and she was saying the first family that actually stayed, they were in the NICU watching it, the family room being finished.
Oh, right.
And it's like, wow, you know, wonder what that's going to be like. And then they got the opportunity to come and stay in there. I think they were a little bit overwhelmed when they realised that they had their own room with their own ensuite. So, that's a great kickoff story for the family room. But, you know, we've had a local family that stayed for 99 nights in 2018. A local family, an Invercargill family. It's a long haul, you know, to stay in their space. The McRae family, which I talked about, that sponsored a room, they stayed in the family room in Invercargill. Then they had to move for critical care up to our facility in Auckland. Their journey, which has been a positive one, it was so well supported by the team that they decided that they wanted to sponsor a room. And, you know, families giving back to other families, that's what it's all about. So, I think those are beautiful. I mean, look, there's even, you know, a local sports legend, Wendy Fruit, was a guest at one stage. You know, you just never can tell who gets affected by this and when, and what their needs are at the time.
Yeah, and look, you know, I've got three daughters and had to spend time at a hospital, so, you know, well, what you do is, it's absolutely invaluable. And, you know, the family room accommodation, I mean, there must be really high demand. How do you handle that?
Yeah, there is. Look, demand's not going to go away anytime soon. I think there's still some issues around paediatric healthcare delivery in New Zealand that makes things tricky for us from a planning point of view. But we never turn a family away, right? So if they need it, we'll find accommodation for them. We're reasonably lucky that the team can manage that inflow and outflow, and they work very, very closely with the hospital, which does make a huge difference. And the hospital staff are awesome. They love the facility. They do a great job of communicating with our team. And so that makes that transition in and out a little bit easier.
So what are your future plans and goals for the Ronald McDonald Family Room at Southland Hospital, Wayne?
So we're lucky. We do have earmarked some land either side of the current facility. It is really going to come down to what happens with paediatric healthcare, specifically in that region. And part of that's going to be determined by what happens in Dunedin with the hospital there and how they're going to triage, because there's not just the local families, but there seems to be a significant, or not seems to be, there is a significant number of families that come from Queenstown as Southland is the first port of call. Now, that may change when Dunedin Hospital goes in, but we're working with the hospital and Te Whareroa and Health New Zealand. And now, you know, we need to be cognizant of the new government and what their intentions are around paediatric healthcare in New Zealand. So there's a lot of demand. So at the moment, about 30 to 40% of families that need to travel to a hospital with a child don't get access to the type of care that we see in Southland. If we do nothing, If Ronald McDonald House does nothing and doesn't put any more facilities in 5 years' time, that'll be about 50%. And we just don't think that's it. So we're trying to deal with, from a national point of view, the strategy around making sure that we meet that unmet need. It's tricky because the price of land's not going down. Despite what everybody says.
Yeah, and we don't appear to be making any more either, which is kind of weird.
No, it's actually, I think maybe that's the problem, you know. We're running out of land and people want more of it. We're working, we've got really good plans. It's just a matter of, you just have to be careful in that you make sure that you're tying in with what's happening, not just at a local level, but at a national.
With that, how can people get involved and support Ronald McDonald House and Family Rooms right around the country? What's the best way to do that?
Best way, jump on our website, rmhc.org.nz. There's lots of different options there and donation pieces. From a local point of view, I think connecting to the Ronald McDonald Family Room Southland Hospital Facebook page is a really good opportunity just to get it for local families to understand what's going on in the region and what's coming up as far as events and, you know, like the Ray White Home and Garden Show. Any other local activities we've got. For example, we've just had McHappy Day through our McDonald's mission partners, and that was very successful. If you need an excuse to go to Macca's, make sure you do it in October at some stage when we have the next one, because there's huge amounts of money that goes that way. So jumping onto our Facebook page, jumping onto our website, will give you a really good idea of what's going on, and there's that automatic option to donate straight away.
Yeah, I remember a McHappy Day many years ago. They put me in the drive-through. And I don't think I'll get a full-time job there, to be fair, Wayne.
Yeah. They had one of the McDonald's corporate communications director, and they put him in the back of the restaurant. I think they said to him, just stick to your day job, mate.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, it's a great initiative. Our partnership with McDonald's goes back 50 years next year on a global scale and right back to our inception in New Zealand over 30-odd years ago. That partnership with, you know, a globally recognised brand is important to us, and there is always opportunity to donate at your local Macca's to RMHC. Look for the donate page or roundup.
Well, Wayne, thank you so much for everything that you do and all the staff who work for Ronald McDonald House, and I really appreciate your time today.
No, thank you, Brent. And look, I'm the one that gets to do the speaking, but I'm very grateful that I've got fantastic staff right across the country, from Invercargill right through, you know, up to Auckland and wherever we need to be to make sure that we look after families throughout New Zealand. So thanks for your time today.
On Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, The Outlet.
The talk of Queenstown.
Thanks for listening to The Outlet, your local interview podcast for Queenstown. If you have a story or an interview you think should be featured on The Outlet podcast, get in touch by using the contact button on your Queenstown app. The Outlet is produced and published by the Queenstown app and supported with funding from the New Zealand Public Interest Journalism Fund. All episodes of The Outlet are available on the podcast button on your Queenstown app and wherever you get your podcasts.